Welcome to the Nuclear Medicine and Molecular Medicine Podcast. Podcast 15, Reconstruction Algorithm and Collimator Choice. Welcome again to another edition of the Nuclear Medicine Molecular Medicine Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed our previous editions, and I encourage you to go back and have a look at some of the previous podcasts that we've done before. I'm sure you'll find them very interesting, and fortuitously many of them have foretold some of the developments that are coming online in nuclear medicine today. I think you'll find this one particularly interesting because we're going to look at some of the things that we've looked at previously, that's reconstruction algorithms, but how it impacts on our choice of equipment in our gamma cameras. And I'm sure you'll find this particularly interesting. One thing I'd like to ask, if it's possible, I really appreciate it, the S&M, and I'd really appreciate it if anybody is going to the S&M, I'm sure plenty of the listeners are, that they provide us with some feedback. Ideally, you can dial in, and instructions are provided that at nukecast.com, that's nuccast.com, on how you can just ring in with a commentary or an interview, or you can email me a audio file of what your impressions were of the S&M and what you found interesting and what you found most valuable. If you prefer not to do that, I would also appreciate it if you could just send me an email telling me about what you thought, what you found, and what excited you about the S&M meeting. To those that have just come from the Australian meeting, the ANZ S&M meeting, I'd love to hear some feedback from that. I haven't had any feedback from that yet, and I'd appreciate it for those that have been to that meeting if they could let us know what they thought about that. So all feedback's most welcome, including on the having a separate cardiac podcast. So I'm sure you'll find details of that. I detailed that in my last podcast. But I won't delay any longer, and I'll take you to the BNMS meeting where I spoke to Dr. Kaspersky. We've got Dr. Kaspersky here from University College Hospitals in London, and he produced a very interesting paper that follows on from some of the talks we've had earlier on in our podcasts that looked at iterative reconstruction. One of the factors that that influences iterative reconstruction, because we can recover the loss of resolution caused by collimators, is to decide what collimator we're going to use then. And that's an important factor. We can this can help us do that. So before going too much further, I'll just ask Dr. Kaspersky to tell us a little bit about his history, about what he does, and a little bit about UCL hospitals in London, about the work he does there.
Well, I'm a research assistant at the UCL hospitals, and I'm working with Professor Brian Hatton. We have a physics research group in there, and we are based at the hospital, so we have a clinical environment. We have one PET CT camera, another one just coming, I think, a couple of SPECT cameras, Infinia Hawkeye, one of the most modern one, I think. A couple of older ones, but our group is doing research which should be clinically oriented. So we are supposed to produce things that might be applied in practice.
Okay, one of the things you did was look at what changing the collimator did, how that affected your reconstructed SPECT image. Can you tell us a bit about how you tested that and what sort of tests you did to determine how good the reconstructed image was, how much resolution it was, how much noise there was.
Yeah, so we used the NCAT Phantom, which is well known, I think, to the medical imaging community, which is an anthropomorphic digital phantom based on measuring a large number of real patients. We were interested in myocardial perfusion, so we are looking at the heart in the phantom. The phantom does incorporate cardiac motion and respiratory motion, and we included all this in our simulation. So what we did, we just put the realistic activity levels to the region of the torso, basically, in the phantom. And we are simulating projections numerically, but modeling Poisson noise, attenuation, and the resolution of the collimator, distance-dependent resolution of the collimator. And we measured the quality of our image reconstruction, defining parameters like recovery coefficient, which was the ratio of the number of counts in the reconstructed left ventricle to the original left ventricle. We also defined contrast as the number of counts in the ventricle wall to the number of counts in the chambers, and again we related that to the original. So these two were the measures of the fidelity, if you like, of the image. And we measured noise as by the coefficient of variance or coefficient of variation, again averaged over the left ventricle wall region. So it's important that all our parameters refer to the ventricle walls on the object which is really interested in myocardial perfusion.
So you're able to really produce a graph of variety of imaging parameters and look at what the best imaging parameter was for each particular collimator?
Yeah, that's right. We have the advantage here of knowing the ground truth, because we know exactly what the original image was. So we obviously cannot do it with the patient, but here we can, so we can measure quite precisely how good or bad our reconstruction is.
So you found out what the best reconstruction, what the best collimator choice was for both filtered back projection and also for a limited 3D reconstruction technique.
Yes, that's right. The best it's maybe it may be sometimes hard to say what do you mean by best. For the case of no resolution recovery, we actually used OSEM in both cases just to incorporate the correct attenuation correction, but I think results for the filtered back projection will be very similar if we don't use attenuation at all. For the case without attenuation, without resolution recovery, as you look at the contrast noise curves, you can see that at different noise levels, different collimators are the best. So it depends really on what image do you call most clinically useful. Then accordingly you have to adjust in the collimator, but more or less in the region of where the clinically useful images are, the best collimator was the high resolution for the typical clinical scanning times and activities. And so this confirms that the current recommendations when there's a reconstruction without resolution recovery are actually correct. So HR collimator produces best images for this particular reconstruction method.
So the HR collimator was best for sort of most clinical images, unless they were low count. I mean, the low count images, you'd need a different collimator?
Yeah, that's right. It all changes with, among others, with the number of counts. So for thallium, for example, general purpose collimator is recommended, and it was also reflected in our simulations. As you go towards lower number of counts, higher sensitivity collimators are preferred or give a better balance between noise and resolution. So this was confirmed in our simulation.
Yes, this will come as no surprise to anyone, I'm sure. But I think what was useful was really the second part of your talk, which looked at what happened when you did resolution recovery. Now, what did resolution recovery do to collimator choice?
Yeah, that changes quite significantly the pattern of the contrast noise curves. So, as you may guess, if you do model the resolution in your reconstruction, you somehow know that the data are blurred, and you know how they are blurred. So you can in principle guess maybe even exactly what was the original image. I'm actually not quite clear about it. What are the real limits if we go towards infinite number of counts? It's actually quite an interesting problem, maybe not so much from the practical point of view, but theoretically. But definitely, if we are doing the resolution recovery, it turns out that the optimum collimator shifts towards high sensitivity collimators. For the scanning times that we used, which was about 25 minutes, which is more or less the standard scanning time for myocardial perfusion, the optimum was for a collimator of sensitivity of about 4 or 5 times that of high resolution. If we go to shorter scanning time, like 10 minutes, this optimum shifts still further towards lower resolution, higher sensitivity. The optimum is then about 5 or 6 times the sensitivity of HR collimator.
I thought one thing in your talk that was quite interesting was that there wasn't a great deal of difference between the relatively good sensitivity collimators, whether it was medium resolution or high sensitivity or you know, very high sensitivity. They all seem to be, you know, in a fairly narrow range for clinical imaging in terms of the outcome. Would that be correct? So it really didn't matter which collimator you chose, as long as it wasn't a particularly high resolution collimator.
Yeah, that's right. So this optimum or this minimum in the if you plot the error, for example, of the reconstructed image is fairly broad. So if you don't choose exactly the best collimator, as I say, it's best is still not very well defined here, because you always have the freedom to choose this balance between resolution and noise by using a filter, for example, or stopping at a certain number of iterations. But as you said, this minimum is fairly broad. So from practical point of view, we'll probably choose a collimator of rather higher sensitivities from the higher end in terms of sensitivity, in terms of resolution, because of the number of iterations required to reconstruct. Of course, if we choose a collimator with a very broad view, so to speak, very low resolution, then you need a lot of computation time to reconstruct such an image. So certainly this is one of the main challenges, if you like, or disadvantages of going for high sensitivity collimators. So in practice, this will certainly have to be taken into account, and probably we need to relax a little bit our optimum collimator to in order to obtain reasonable reconstruction times.
So basically one of the things, so that really means that one resolution, one collimator does all. You could almost buy just one set of collimators for a camera, and that would, you know, suit most clinical situations, and it would mean that you wouldn't have to buy multiple sets of collimators, providing you're using reconstruction recovery software.
Well, I think it's not true. I think the point is that your optimum collimator depends on one hand on the number of counts, but also on the size of your object. That is something which we haven't investigated very thoroughly so far. But it's quite clear to me that this is one of the main points here. We are looking at the myocardial perfusion imaging. So our object is a left ventricle wall, which is a fairly large object, and we are looking at perfusion defects, which are typically also bigger than 1 centimeter or usually more than that. So we are not looking at, for example, small hot spots, which we need to localize very precisely. In that situation, it would be quite different. I think then probably higher resolution collimators would be optimum. But if you are looking at task of imaging fairly large, possibly low contrast objects, then I think the optimum shifts towards higher sensitivity collimators.
But clearly, when you use resolution recovery software, no matter what collimator you use, you end up with a better result than not using resolution recovery software. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that we can say. And of course, provided we are doing it correctly. Because it's more complicated, so of course there is more room for errors.
Yeah, I mean, one of the tasks when people buy a gamma camera is that they've got to fork out money for software and for new sets of collimators. I suppose what I was pushing towards was perhaps saying, instead of getting an extra set of collimators, perhaps you should get the resolution recovery software.
That would certainly be helpful. But as I say, the whole point is if you do use this resolution recovery, it may turn out that your optimum collimator is actually quite different from what is used routinely. So if it becomes a common practice to use reconstruction with resolution recovery, I think the whole choice of collimators will change probably, and probably it will shift towards higher sensitivity collimators. Of course, there are lots of other issues to consider.
Yes, and University College will be certainly looking at that. They're planning on, getting one of the new D-spec cameras, and they might be looking at those sorts of things. And of course, Brian Hutton's there, and he was one of the pioneers of iterative reconstruction. So I'm sure there's a lot of good work going to be coming from there. So I really appreciate you helping us out with the podcast. How have you found the meeting so far?
I was maybe a bit nervous because I just had my talk, but now I have it off my head, so I can relax more and listen to others and enjoy it.
Yes, we all feel that way when we do presentations, I'm sure. Thank you very much. Much appreciated. Well, I'd like to thank Dr. Kapersky and, in fact, all of the speakers, and there's been many of them who've assisted us with the podcast. I really appreciate the time and effort that people give to helping with the podcast, especially speakers who can provide information. And that brings us to our next lot of speakers. We've got a whole range of them coming up from the ICNIC conference. That's the International Nuclear Cardio Conference. And it's a lot of very exciting work presented there. And there's lots of new developments in nuclear cardiology, both in hardware, in software, and more importantly than anything else, in clinical impact and how more relevant than ever nuclear medicine is to cardiac care. So I'm sure you'll find that particularly interesting. So the next podcast, I'm going to speak to Dr. Strauss, and I'm sure many of you are familiar with his work, and we're going to look at vulnerable plaque and how nuclear medicine can help with that. So I'd be really thrilled if you could join us for that, and please let your colleagues know about this, let your CME providers know about this. Perhaps they could even do a quiz on the podcast so that you can get some CME points for listening to the podcast. But more importantly than all of that, I'd really appreciate it, as I detailed before the interview, I'd really appreciate your feedback, in particular about the S&M, about the ANZ S&M, and you know, any meetings that you're going to, or any new developments that you might have. So please, go to newcast.com, and that'll give instructions on how you can provide feedback to the podcast. So I'd really appreciate that. But that's all from today, and I'll be back sooner, hopefully rather than later, with the next edition of our podcast. And I'm sure you'll find the upcoming interviews particularly interesting and particularly valuable. So goodbye from me, and hope to hear from you soon.